Welcome to the AppAppen podcast, episode 89, a podcast for IT professionals. Hi, I'm Al.
I'm John.
I'm Jim.
And I'm Jerry.
In this episode, we talk about career paths.
We talk about CI/CD.
Talk about learning.
And we also talk about being okay. So without further ado, let's get on with the show.
And we're back for the first one of 2021. So, indeed. So how has everyone been so far this year then?
Aside from lockdown, I think we're all doing all right.
Yep, I'd agree with that.
That's just for, you know, historical reference for anyone that's kind of playing this back and going, I wonder what happened January 2021.
Yeah, this is the third lockdown in case there are any more after this.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Well mentioned.
Yes, this will be part of the historical archives one day, I'm sure.
So I am actually, all joking aside, I am actually writing a private-only diary for sort of some sort of historical archive. It's all done in WordPress, so I can post to it whenever, just in case. You know, in the future, somebody says, has anyone got a diary of what they did during lockdown? It's a bit sad, really, I have to be honest, but at some point, you know, I probably should go through, sanitise it, make sure I've not said anything I shouldn't have done, and then stick it up on archive.org or something.
I've noticed a friend of mine is doing, seems to be doing a post every day this year, also in WordPress. So maybe a link in the show notes if anyone is interested.
Didn't you appear on Wikipedia as well this week, John?
It wasn't this week. It's from quite a while ago. So one of the microblogging clients for StatusNet, which is kind of one of the early sort of Fediverse things, was called Gwibber, and I was posting on StatusNet quite extensively then. And so in the screenshot for Gwibber is my face on the Wikipedia article. So it's from something ridiculous like 2010 or something. So it is a fair while back. But yes, that was me on there apparently.
Yeah. Internet famous.
Internet famous. Not quite as internet famous as some others. But trying.
I was reading your blog post the other day as well about your career path. It was quite an interesting read.
Yeah, so that came about. One of the things that I'm involved in at work is they're trying to kind of produce a central place for anyone that's working in the same business unit as me to find out, you know, who people are and where they've come from and stuff. And although nobody actually directly asked me to write my career path out, I thought, well, you know, I've got half an hour to spare one morning, I'll just sit down and kind of sketch out how I got to where I got to here. And just on the grounds that maybe it would be interesting for other people to know, you know, we've all taken some pretty weird routes into technology. You know, yeah. I mean, I worked for a chemical trading firm, for crying out loud, you know, shipping chemicals to the Middle East, not those kind of chemicals before anyone's worrying, but you know, but so yeah, so I mean, I dropped out of university, didn't do particularly well on my A-levels and GCSEs, but I've still ended up in a job in IT doing stuff that I love to do, working with an amazing crew of people. So, you know, just because somebody doesn't do great at school or, you know, isn't the world's greatest coder or whatever, and you're interested in computers, there's still a great place for you. So that was why I wrote it.
Yeah. I mean, I'd really like to go back to school and say, look where I am now, kind of thing. that's what I really want to do one day. I don't know if the teacher's going to be there, the same teacher's there when I was a kid, kind of thing. But I want to go back and say, look where I am now, being in both of the bottom sets at school. So yeah, it's an interesting read. So at work, our cloud journey is nearly at the end, from being on-premise to being all in Azure. We've kind of got the last bits and straggles of what's left on site, and wondering if what we should be doing about moving those last bits, if we wait for... It's mainly if developers can kind of do their... We've basically got tickets which say you need to fix this so that we can decom everything on site, or we're going to have to lift and pick those kind of things and just move them to the cloud so that they are in the cloud. We've got the classic thing where it's obviously people aren't shouting enough. Obviously they want to be the salespeople want to be selling the shiny stuff, and that's what the developers get to work on. But at the same time, we're trying to save money by decomming everything we've got on site, and then we can get rid of our very expensive express route we've got sitting there and the very expensive internet pipe we've got coming into our site. So we So that's kind of what my current job is. Is, as you know, guys are kind of coming back from a kind of an infrastructure background. And obviously, I have picked up the last couple of months, or the last, well, 8 months, has picked up Ansible and Terraform and used it to basically build all our IaaS VMs. So we still run a number of VMs because we have another services which has to run on a physical VM, and no one knew how they were built, and they were basically built differently in each environment. So I've managed to get kind of using Ansible and Terraform to configure those. So next thing I really need to is what I want to really kind of focus on next in my personal development, really, is one of the things we kind of think we're kind of using two things at work, Bamboo for our kind of our Git and Bitbucket is our kind of Git repository, and then Bamboo is our deployment.
Is it CI/CD? Yeah.
Yeah. And we are looking to use Azure DevOps. We've got all our code I've started creating region is in Azure DevOps. So I don't really know what to really focus on next, because I want to basically move to Azure DevOps, because apparently the CI/CD we're using at the moment is kind of basically going to be they're pushing everyone to the cloud version of it. And obviously, we're paying for Azure DevOps anyway for being in Azure, so they want to kind of move that. So do I really kind of work? There doesn't seem to be – I'm not really a developer kind of thing, and all the training I've seen on like the Azure website and everything is all about more developer-focused, more than an infrastructure guy. So it's just working out, should I really focus on really learning Terraform more and the modularization of it, and then look at pipelines is what I think I need to start looking at, because I want to basically automate our Ansible and Terraform kind of deployment. Yeah, so it's for coming from an infrastructure guy, I find the whole pipeline and coding kind of quite scary.
I think just to clear up a bit for the users, I was going to say for the listeners, Bamboo is Atlassian's CI system. I've not used it myself, but I think just to clear that up, in terms of pipelines and so on, all that is really a way of automating what you would do anyway, I think. So it's just a series of steps which do what you need to do, which effectively is getting really, in the sort of DevOpsy world, is getting code from being committed to being deployed. That's all it is, really. So it's just a series of steps that are automated, that are triggered by, for instance, a Git commit. Although it could be triggered manually or through other means, so I don't think there's anything to be scared of, really. It's just a way of automating things.
Yeah, well, I'll echo that as well. It's kind of from my perspective, a pipeline. All it really is as you say, an automated process doing what a human would do by either clicking or putting in CLI commands. So realistically, the first kind of pipelines you probably do are almost, what would I do, but how would this do it for me? And then you can start expanding on it, whether you get into things like automated testing, whether you get into things like, you know, continuous deployment. So, you know, you got a deployment that goes out and then it's something to test it, and if it fails, then it rolls it back, that kind of thing. But I think initially the main thing to do is just, you know, get the pipeline doing what you would do anyway. And then at that point, once you're comfortable with that, it's quite easy to just expand upon, because it's not quite modular in the sense, but because of the way you think about CI and CD continuous integration, continuous deployment, is almost like in stages. So if you get one stage right, then just move on to the next bit. So it's the way I worked at the end of my last place, when we were using GitLab for our continuous integration, rather than trying to go, right, how do I do all of it? It was, right, how do I do the first part of using linting to make sure that the code that's being committed is correct and there just isn't any syntax errors. Right, I've done that bit, then move on to the next bit. And it was just things like that, rather than, you know, seeing it as all this one big thing, just split it down into little bits is the way I found. And eventually, you know, sometimes it can take weeks, sometimes months, but eventually you'll get there with something that's actually quite workable and, you know, brings a lot of benefits, just because people can deploy stuff straight away without having a human in there to slow it down a lot of the time.
Yeah, I agree.
You tend to in the pipeline, you tend to have stages, which is effectively, if this stage fails, then the pipeline fails and the job fails, and then that's like in a script you have a return code other than zero, and therefore the stage fails, and that's pretty much it.
You guys mentioning about CI/CD systems. One of the people that I follow quite closely is a lady called Lorna Jane Mitchell, and she was doing some stuff on Twitch. So she's quite active in a project called RST to PDF. Jerry and Al and I possibly have all seen her at OddCamp, but she uses RST to PDF, which is a Python project. It's an open source project. And one of the things that she's been doing is actually been moving them from, I think they'll be using Travis, which had an open source amount of 3 minutes from there to GitHub Actions. But so she was going through the same sort of stuff you're talking about, you know, when somebody does a pull request, you know, run these tests. When somebody does a commit, run these tests. When somebody commits something to master, do these tests. You know, so you can have all those sorts of test things. And quite frankly, if you're using, there's a methodology called GitOps, which is where whatever you have in production is what is in your Git repo. So when you're looking at, you know, what's changed in my environment, it should match what your Git chain, what your Git repositories look like. And so to a certain extent, if you're following the GitOps methodologies, then what you have in production is what your repo says. So as a result, if you make a change to your repo, it should immediately trigger a change to your environment. So having a CI/CD system at that point makes a lot of sense, because you're then using your CI/CD system to, as they said, make the changes that a human would be making for you. So to sort of drag that back to your question about, you know, what should you be learning next? Well, it depends on what you need for your environment. If at the moment you've got a reasonably reliable Terraform script that deploys your environment, well, you don't need to invest that much more time in learning Terraform, unless you want to, at which point you're then looking at, you know, well, should you be looking at your post config with Ansible? Or do you need to do more? Do you need to learn more about how the pipelines work? Are there other people that you can bounce those ideas off? Unfortunately, it's difficult to say without knowing exactly kind of which bits you're strongest with and what your environment needs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so in my team, we're all quite a fresh team. There's a couple people. There's one guy who's kind of done Azure DevOps before, and he kind of does all the kind of, if there's an issue in our current pipeline tool, it's all running Java, which is nice. He comes from a programming kind of thing. So, yeah, there's not really one I can kind of really pull from. But I think talking about you, I think it's definitely, I need to kind of, the thing about returning in code zero, I think I need to look in that. Yeah, and I think I'm mainly there with Terraform. It's just, I think I think we'll probably discuss it, but it's the modularization of it, isn't it? You can have modules, you can kind of pull different things in it depending on to build the Terraform you want. If I remember correctly what we're talking about before.
Yes, yeah. So modules in Terraform are essentially the Terraform that you've got, but made a bit more generic so that you can supply variables to it. So whether that's, you know, a different VNet, a different, if you're in AWS, a different VPC that you'd be using, that kind of thing. But for the most part, it'd be more or less the same as you kind of write to begin with, just being able to supply variables to it. So it can either build it in different environments, or it can build it in a slightly different way, or have a slightly different, you know, in the past, I've done a lot of things with things like CloudInit and CloudConfig, and a lot of the Terraform side is exactly the same, but it's just got different CloudConfig because you want a different application running, that kind of thing. But for the most part, the modularization is just taking what you've got and just making it generic so it can be used by other things. And as I say, for a lot of that can be done by just taking what you got, take all these specific sides out of it, replacing them with variables, and then just calling that module with the variables that you had before. And at that point, it's now modular. So it's just splitting it almost into two parts, one that's including the other rather than just one big file that's got it all in.
I think that's what we need to look at, because basically, like, what we want to do is, like, as I say, we're deploying our IaaS VMs, but if we're deploying them into dev, like, we're just testing code by building and deploying machines. We don't want to be setting up backups all the logging. So what I was thinking of doing is that if it's going into dev, don't bother putting the bit where you do the logging and the backups. But if it is going in production, that those things are enabled. So yeah, it's just one of those things. It's like scary when you not don't know what it is. And we had a guy who was working before did a pipeline what we want to do, but he just over really engineered it. So
quite easy to do.
Yeah, see, yeah, I was going to say it's very easy to do that. I was looking at something this week, and I was like, it was on Jenkins, and I was like, I found this shared library which should do this and this and this, and the guy was just like, no, just put it, don't bother with any sort of code like that, just put it in the UI, do it really simply, get it working, and then down the line, it's good to know about the thing that you found, but we don't need it to begin with. You know, just have almost like a proof of concept to begin with, and then sort of finesse it as you go on.
Yeah, I suppose the only other thing potentially to look at, and I don't know whether it's relevant to your environment yet or will be, but, and I don't know if you have much experience with it yet, but just things like containers, we're quite heavy into it in my current place, we were in my last place as well. And even if it's not a, you know, we're going to start using this, it's just more thinking in terms of how you would split a application up into something that only does one part of it, but then can also be used by other services to say, right, this support, you know, this provides the API for something, therefore it only needs to sit in this container rather than the entire app sits in something, or, you know, you're running an entire VM for a single API kind of thing as well. So, and again, it depends, you know, where your company is at, where you are with it. And it may not be something that, you know, your company even wants, but it's worth at least investigating as to whether, you know, the whole point in containers is you can start using, share more resources because they're using less to run in the first place. You're not running an entire emulated environment. You're just taking everything from the kernel downwards is shared, and then it's sort of like the sandbox above is the part that you're now having to deal with, and there's a lot less resources required to do that.
One of the things that I have seen about creating modules for Terraform, and this is from the official guidance from HashiCorp, is don't make a module for every resource type. So basically think of it as a, you know, if you were to write a document that explains how to deploy your environment, think of the bits that you are deploying each time. So for example, if you are tending to deploy the same VNet each time with the same subnets each time, then create that as a module. And then once you've got your infrastructure pieces done, so your VNet, your subnets, perhaps you might have load balancers, but so think about how your application hangs together. So if your application is a load balancer which talks to a particular service running on Kubernetes or IaaS or, you know, whatever, that kind of chain should be a module, perhaps. And then that will also include your network security groups, and maybe your, it wouldn't necessarily include your application that you're deploying though, because that's a separate, that might be different between environments. And that's kind of how you should be thinking about it. But I have heard, I think even Stu's mentioned it before, what you tend to end up with doing is you'll write your Terraform one way, and 2 or 3 months later, you'll come across some, you know, handed down tablets of wisdom from the great internet giants. And they'll say, you know, you shouldn't be doing it like this. You should be doing it like that instead. And so then you kind of stop, you take stock of what's in your Terraform file, and you rewrite it, you refactor your Terraform thing based on this kind of new nugget of wisdom. And then 3, 4, 6 months later, somebody says, oh, don't do this, do that instead. And again, you're refactoring, but because it is, quote, just Terraform, you know, you can always take that script you've got and run it up against a new environment and say, does this build the way I'm expecting it to? Yes. Tick. Okay. We can roll that out in prod.
Especially if you have tests which you can test to get your refactored code against.
Yeah. What one other side as well is not just, you know, don't make modules of, you know, every part, but there's sometimes where sometimes you'll think, I'll make a module of that, and actually it was less work to just leave it as it was than to create the module in the first place. A good example for that for me is in AWS, there's Route 53, which is your DNS provider, at which point creating a DNS record in that is as you'd type as many variables to send to a module as you would to just create the resource in the first place. So sometimes we, you know, early on in my last place when we was doing Terraform, we tried to create a module for everything, just every single little thing. Just go, right, we're using Route 53, that needs a module. We're using the EC2 for virtual machines, we need a module for that. And then later on, we decided, you know what, sometimes modules make sense. Sometimes it's just overkill. We literally don't need anything like this. We need to just modularize the parts that will be reused. And, you know, sometimes you can almost create an application stack. So, you know, a good example at my last place would have been ECS, which is AWS's container, kind of managed Docker rather than Kubernetes at that point. DynamoDB, which is the NoSQL database backend, and they would have a Route 53 record in front of it to point the DNS name to the application and putting it onto our load balancer. And nearly every single service was always that. So it meant that we would modularize that, and then you just need about five variables to spin up a new version of it. However, if you want to add a new DNS record, there's no point creating a module to do just that. So yeah, it gets to a point where we found the best way was to create modules that were more like how we worked or what we'd create often, rather than just a, you know, modularize every little thing so you can use variables with everything. Sometimes it's just not worth it.
I was going to say, in a sort of DevOps or agile kind of centric way, you have a user story, which is, I want to do this. And that often breaks down quite well to a Terraform module. So, yeah, so you say, I want an application, or if you want to go a bit more lower level, maybe I need a container registry and some Docker containers, then that's probably a good candidate for a module in terms of infrastructure. Because, you know, a module, you have variables that you input into it, and you might expect to get some outputs from the infrastructure. Structure once it's built, like for instance a public IP or something like that as an output. So you put these inputs in, you get this output out, and that makes it a good candidate for a module.
Talking about, there was a something you mentioned there, Jerry, that made me think of something that I saw in the This Week in AWS newsletter, or Last Week in AWS newsletter, which is something about that turned up about architectural decision records, ADRs. I think that's what, ADRs. And it's something that gov.uk, the GDS team, are doing. And that was where they linked to. And effectively, it's a set of tools that you store as markdown in your repository that explains why decisions were made. And I'm going to stick a link to sort of one of these documents into the show notes, because it's actually quite a sensible, particularly if your team's rapidly changing, or if you want to explain why decisions were made. But so, say for example, I'm just looking at one for the gov.uk public repo, and it says things like status partially superseded, context as part of the migration to AWS, we need to define our IP strategy and blah, blah, blah. We're going to use these records. The decision, one VPC per environment, three public subnets, three private subnets, and these are the IP addresses. And it says these IP addresses have been superseded by ADR, and then a document reference. So you can actually use this document. It's almost like an RFC, if you come across the request for comments thing that IANA runs. It's kind of that same sort of mentality of kind of documenting why each change was made.
At work, we have a technical decisions log, but it's kept separately. It's kept in Confluence, so it seems like this would be a good idea to keep it in the code somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, and it's something I'm going to sort of bring up at my work as well, because I only came across it this weekend, but it just seems like a really sort of sensible way of recording things. And there's some tools that you can run on OS X and on Linux, which is just a command line tool for making these documents, quite easy structures to kind of read and manipulate. But yeah, so I'll stick a link to that in the chat, because it's in the show notes rather, because it's quite a sensible sort of way of recording things.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting approach. I mean, having changed jobs recently, one of the biggest, I don't want to say problems, but one of the biggest challenges I found it was not what they did, but why they came to the decision to do it. And sometimes, you know, it'd just be nice to see it. And then you can almost understand the architecture because you know how it got there, rather than just this is the architecture. And it's just a lot harder to justify at that point in your mind as to, well, why would you do it like this? See something, it makes sense. So yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I hit my head against the wall multiple times a day going, why did we do it like this?
Yeah, but there'll still be parts where I am aware everyone is just going, snap, still don't get why you've done it like that, even with the justification. But hey, you know, it's just the thing sometimes, isn't it?
I want to actually, how do you find time to learn this stuff? Because I think you seem really good at this, John, and probably you can go into this a bit further. I mean, I understand that you kind of do lots of blogging, you get to read, and you still get to do work and have the family time, and still manage to do these podcasts. How do you kind of, because I feel ouch, kind of like, with my kind of life situation, it is literally just work and kids and relaxing kind of thing at the moment.
Sure. There's a couple of things to this. One is that, and this is going to seem a bit odd, really. My wife and I both have very different sleep cycle sort of patterns. So my wife goes to bed much earlier than I do, and I will tend to go to bed maybe 2 or 3 hours after her. So that gives me sort of a two or three hour window when I can experiment with code and stuff like that. Within the work side of things, because my role is the sort of role that it is, my boss expects me, basically he gives me a task, which might be, you know, go away and learn how to do this thing and then explain to the rest of us how it's done once you've finished. So I get time in my working day to learn, essentially. But one thing that one of my colleagues before started down this route, one of the things that one of my colleagues said was that he books an hour into his day. So his first half hour is maybe going through emails and stuff like that. But the next hour, he's got a scheduled block of time in his day, which is dedicated to learning. And, you know, obviously, if you've got other high impact things that come in, then they take priority. If you've got something that's, you know, a critical issue, if you're behind on a project, then you can bump it. The key thing that he sort of expressed to me, and I have to agree with him, is, you know, if you don't make that time for yourself, if you don't make that learning time in your working day, then you, unless you have the flexibility to do stuff outside of work, you're never going to learn. If your company doesn't actively encourage you to learn stuff at work, then essentially they don't expect you to stay. Because if you never have time to grow when you're at work, then you're of finite use to them. Now, to a certain extent, you know, people take jobs for all sorts of reasons. People remain in jobs for all sorts of reasons. You know, you might be able to pick stuff up on the fly every single day, you know, from the people you're working with. It doesn't need to be like, you know, I will go and spend an hour watching YouTube videos on how to create Terraform, whatever. But what might be useful is if you say, if you perhaps pick a colleague that you are, have similar destinations in mind, but you are coming from different perspectives. So maybe you are much more interested in the Windows side of things. Your colleague's much more interested in the networking side of things, or you're really into the Linux side of things and that person's really into the DNS side of things, or want to use a coder and want to use, you know, Active Directory wizard or whatever. If you have that, if you say every 2 weeks, you're going to spend that hour sitting down and explaining your things that you've learned in that 2 week period to that other person. And the other off week of those every 2 weeks, that person's going to spend that hour sitting down with you and explaining to you all the things that they've learned that week. That's one thing you could look at, possibly. We've got quite a strong mentoring program that's just started this year. It's not just started this year, but it's the first time I've been involved in it this year. So you might want to ask the firm that you work for if they could set up a mentoring scheme so that you've got like a standardized work. Now, again, every firm's different. Everybody's job is different. If you're on service desk taking calls, call after call after call, they may not necessarily have the time, the space for you to say, you know, you're going to do learning in that period of time. But again, if you're not growing at work, you need to grow somewhere else. And if you're not growing somewhere else, then the chances are effectively what you become is you become really, really good at the one thing that you're doing at the moment, which might be brilliant for wherever you are in your career at that time. But if you don't plan for growing, let's say this is 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and you're a whiz at Windows NT 3.5. Fantastic. You're the bestest person in the shop at Windows 3.5, or you're the bestest, Windows NT 3.5, or you're the Novell NetWare guru. And then Active Directory comes out. You've got 3 to 5 years of maybe being able to milk that cow, and then it's gone. And you need to reskill yourself quite rapidly. If you've not taken the time to learn something new, whatever that new thing might be, you know, if you wanted to go from being the NT guru or the NetWare person to being a programmer in PHP, for example, again, I'm picking technologies that would have been around, you know, and hot at that point, you know, or Perl or Python or, you know, Linux. If you've not picked that technology to chase after, then you're stuck. And the firm you're working for will eventually have to say to you, you know, you either need to reskill to something else or you're not a benefit to us. Now, if your firm's not started that journey 5 years beforehand, you basically go from the top of the support tree to the bottom of the support tree, and then you have to build your way back up again. Anyway, I've waffled on quite a long about that one.
I think I'd say, my situation was that I worked for a big company for nearly 10 years and then sort of made a jump away from that. And it was a company in the oil industry, and they used IT in a particular way. They used Linux in a particular way. It's not that common elsewhere. For instance, they were just getting into cloud stuff. Kind of jumping away from that was the best thing that I did, I think. Not only in terms of, you know, financial rewards and so on, but it made me learn something new, and I had to learn quickly, and that's kind of started the process ever since. So that was about 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. 5.5, 6 years ago, I've just jumping into something else and learning what I need to learn to get the job done.
Mm.
And it's not a particular tool, but it's learning what you need to learn to do the job. But somehow managing to do that while you're on the job. So that's kind of the approach that I'm taking now. It's almost like leaping from one thing to the next and increasing your knowledge each time. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes you find something you're more interested in, and sometimes something that you kind of learn that is maybe a bit harder to learn. Maybe there's not as much information out there to learn it. But then that's why contracting fitted me quite well, I think. And so that's been my approach for the last few years anyway.
The other thing as well that you mentioned, Al, is that I blog a fair amount. One of the things that I tend to do is I blog stuff whenever I learn something. And it's not because I want to particularly put my knowledge or my spin on things out there. What I tend to do is I write blog posts actually for an internal audience. So I write the post based on the stuff, quite often, it's not always, but quite often I'll write the stuff based on the piece of work that I'm doing at the time. And rather than documenting it on something internal, I'll write externally, because no one else really is going to be that fussed about how I how I learned my journey to there, but they want to know the outcome. So I'll write the how I learned my journey there as the blog post. I might write, do a, you know, too long, didn't read, you know, summary section at the bottom. But then what I do is I then post the link to my blog post to my colleagues over whatever the internal social media tool is of choice at the time, or, you know, the mailing list or whatever, and say, I've just written this. It's about that thing. And they then have the choice whether to mirror that into their own internal documentation or just take the learning from it. So it's half, you know, I've had to spend the time learning it anyway. So I've documented how I've learned it, usually as I'm going along, to be fair. And then afterwards, I then say, and here's the thing I've just learned. Here's the blog post about it. And I guess part of this comes from kind of the open source mentality that I come from. If I've spent the effort learning it, it means that it's not documented somewhere else. Or if it is documented somewhere else, it might be in three different places or five different places. So if I've written it in one place as one blob of knowledge with all the sources, where I've got everything from, where's the knowledge come from, then I can then use that as my reference for the next person that comes along and is looking for a thing that says how to, you know, how to make IP USB devices work or whatever the thing is. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. From my perspective, I've got kind of a, I don't know, I don't want to call it three layers approach, but there's kind of three different bits I do. One of them is kind of curating who and what I'm following at the time. So in terms of my RSS reader, which I'm not giving up anytime soon, RSS is not dead and never will be, but I curate that more towards, I still have a lot of what I used to have in there, but it tends to be more towards what I'm trying to learn. So I read the articles on it. I may not take in every last little bit about it, but it just opens my eyes to things I wasn't aware of. So, you know, a few years ago, that would have been the existence of Kubernetes in the first place. More recently, it would be things more like Terraform and things like that. So I knew what Terraform was, even though I'd not seen any of the code for it, I knew it existed. And it'd be the same, you know, podcast, you know, way before I was on part of this podcast, I listened to it because it was, you know, more towards the kind of things I was wanting to learn, and the other podcasts as well would, again, the same things, you know, I'll start to hear little nuggets of something that I just go, right, that I'm going to keep in my mind, and the next time something similar comes up at work, I might suggest this is something we might want to look into. And I suppose I've been quite lucky in the past, you know, 5 or so years in the jobs that, while they may not have worked out on a personal level, in terms of professional level, a lot of them have been, if you want to start looking to a technology, as long as it serves a need we have, you're more than welcome to research it. So, I mean, it's coming up for 5 years ago when I was working at a place that they'd started using Docker, but their containers kept dying on the server because the server kept rebooting. Well, what was coming out at the time, it was the first talks of Kubernetes. I suggested it, didn't hear anything for about a couple of weeks, and then next someone walked over and says, start working on that Kubernetes thing. And then the second part comes in, I kind of throw myself in at the deep end. Even if it's something I don't know that well, I'll throw myself in and just go, even if I don't work out how to do this, I can ask others for help. I can just say, no, I've not managed to do it. But a lot of the times I'll, you know, manage to at least get something workable, even if it's not perfect yet, and just say, this is what I've found. And next thing you know, it's, you know, further along on that one. And, at that point, it's to go along with the blogging perspective on that one. When I learn a new technology, if I want to put into a blog, I am very reticent to write something into Word that I don't know 100% myself. So when I'm writing it, I'm also double checking what I'm putting down to make sure that this is what I'm assuming it is, or this is what it seems to be. I better go double check that before I write it down, just in case I'm completely wrong, at which point, you know, sometimes I'm right. More often than not, I'll go, actually, it didn't work how I thought at all. And then I learn about it. And that's just, blogging a lot of the time. Yes, sometimes it's about things I know, but sometimes it's more about something I know vague bits about or starting to learn, but can then use that blog as a way to almost learn about it, because I don't want to teach someone else it wrong. So I start, you know, verifying my own work in that place and, you know, end up learning the technology better at that point as well.
See, the bit that I struggle with is the documenting. I think it's the same, you know, in the sort of work environment as well. It's like, I'll learn something, get it working, but finding the time to actually write that down and teach others about it, I tend not to have that time available. Maybe I should make that time available. But
well, I'm not too bad about documenting what I do at work, is because I like document, because I don't like to be in that situation where you have to fix something and there's no documentation. So I always make sure that I've got documentation at work of how it kind of hangs together. But it's, yeah, it's just with my dyslexia stuff, it's just hard to kind of get it how I want to write it into the into a blog post.
Yeah, when it comes to documentation, the rule that I've been living by for years is, what would I want to see here? Even if it's just a tiny little snippet, or if it's, you know, the exact how everything works, I just look at documentation as if I was new here, and, you know, I've changed jobs a couple of times the past few years, so I usually am the new one. But I just go, when I'm writing this, if I was new to this company, what would I want to see about this technology? And even if it's just, you know, bullet points, something like that, it can be enough. So yeah, that's how I tend to look at documentation anyway.
Cool. So the last thing I wanted to speak about tonight, really before we kind of wrap up, is obviously we're still in lockdown at the moment in the UK. And yeah, if people don't know, I've kind of been going through a divorce the last year and been living on my own kind of the last 3 or 4 months. And I have been struggling with being on my own and being alone and with my thoughts. And I had a session this week with my life coach, and she recommended a podcast called The Alonement Podcast. I'll put a link in the show notes for it. And it's kind of saying, it's actually quite good. I like to speak to my life coach. Actually, we'll put a link in the note to what I did at Odd Camp. I can't remember what Odd Camp it was. It's the one when Jerry, where you had to go I can't remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2017, I think.
Yeah, Canterbury, about my life coach and how she can kind of, even if you know what's on your mind, she'd be able to flip it round kind of thing. It's basically just saying that this Alonement podcast, listen to the first, I'm just currently listening from the reverse kind of order from the first one to, I don't know, 17, about 40 probably, long eight. And the first one's really good. Even if you are in a relationship or in between some relationship, it's a really good listen there. But it's kind of a kind of thing, what says it's actually okay to be alone, and it's actually quite good to kind of get to know yourself kind of thing. Kind of like love yourself before you can love anyone else kind of thing. And then you can kind of bring someone into your life to kind of have the cherry on the top kind of thing. But yeah, give that a listen. It's quite, they got the first guy on there was really good kind of explaining the whole about being alone and it's okay to be alone kind of thing. And I feel so much better after kind of listening through these podcasts. So yeah, be kind to yourself.
I mean, on the same note, there's often content, particularly around sort of the Christmas time and things like that, where they, you know, there are times in all of our lives where life is perhaps a lot more stressful, whether it's for you or for loved ones or friends or, you know, even neighbours on your street that, you know, you don't necessarily see what's going on inside their lives. And it's quite often worth taking the time just to sort of just turn to somebody that you know well, perhaps, or don't know that well, just to ask them if everything's okay. Because sometimes that simple action might just be enough to help somebody, you know, get over a hurdle of saying, actually, no, my life's not okay at the moment. I need help with something. You don't necessarily have to be the person that provides that help, but at the very least, if you ask the question, if you say something, if you say the right thing at the right time to someone, then it might be enough to help them, you know, go and see someone that can help them out with something, whether that might be their general practitioner, their GP, whether that's their, you know, go and find themselves a life coach or a counsellor, or, you know, go and find somebody to help them out with exercise or, you know, losing weight or, you know, just finding the right podcast to listen to sort the heads out. But I think the phrase that's quite often said over here is it's okay to not be okay. And I think that's not necessarily, it's tangential to what Al was just saying, but I think it's well worth just sort of reminding our listeners that, you know, maybe just asking that one question might help someone out where they weren't expecting it before.
Yeah, I suppose at the moment as well, especially with, you know, lockdown and the stress of everything as well, and a lot of people are still, you know, expecting life to still feel normal or, you know, working remotely for the first time, but it's not something that you used to and don't know how to deal with. It is very much okay to feel like it's not okay, as you say. It's a very strange time to be living in at the moment, and it's not, you know, not everyone's expecting, you know, 100% productivity. Not everyone's expecting everyone to be, you know, on top of the game. Everything, things will be different, and, you know, it's fine for it to feel different. It's just how life is right now.
Yeah, I think it's a very normal part of life. It's I think a lot of people will be feeling that maybe right at this time, but for the person that's listening to this podcast in 50 years' time, I'm sure they might be, you know, this hypothetical person might not be feeling okay. So, you know, it's particularly relevant now, but it's always relevant.
Yes.
Well, on that unexpectedly very deep note, I think it might be time to start wrapping things up.
Sounds good. Right. So, as always, we'd like to mention Dave for the audio production, and that we are a proud member of the Other Side Podcast Network. So see the otherside.network for more details.
I'd like to thank our Patreons, who are Andamo, Andy, Dave, Maha, Mike, Stu, this one, Stuart, not this one, and Yannick. Thanks very much, guys. You are doing sterling work by shoving us some money every month.
And yes, as ever, if you do notice any problems with anything we've done, or just, you know, want to send in questions or just give us any feedback, feel free to mail us at mail@admin.admin.podcast.co.uk. And you can also join our very lively Telegram group. The link will be in the show notes, and you can find it on our website, which is admin.admin.podcast.co.uk.
And of course, if you've got any questions that you want us to answer, you can contact us by the email address just mentioned in our Telegram group. And we'll try and we have a section every sort of few shows where we try and answer our listeners' questions. So if you are one of those listeners who is thinking, I really want to know exactly why such and such a thing doesn't work, or how to do such and such a thing, or just get some advice on how you might start to look at those things, then please drop us a question and we'll try and answer it in one of our new shows. So on that note, I think it's time for us to finish up.
Yeah.
A much shorter one than our usual one, so hopefully Dave won't be quite so much work to do this time.
Right, okay then, speak to you all soon.
Speak to you soon. Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Cheers, guys. Bye. Now it's over. I can open any door. Now it's over.
You've been listening to a member of the Other Side Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.